I'm Dr. Fiona Lovely, and this is the Not Your Mother's Menopause podcast. I'm taking the taboos of menopause and perimenopause and bringing light to the dark. No bullshit, no shame. It's time for us to gain a new paradigm in female health, out with the old and in with the new, and I'm bringing fresh perspectives from someone in the arena. I've been practicing women's health for nearly 20 years, and I'm spilling the tea on what it means to live at midlife, knowing that the best is yet to come. I'm sharing my Gen X approach to living through this transition, sassy, a bit sweary, and always honest. Tactical tips and instantly usable information is my aim. I hope to make you laugh and that you learn something new that helps you embrace the change. Together, we bring power to the peri. Onward to the podcast. Howdy, listeners. Dr. Fiona Lovely here, and welcome to the Not Your Mother's Menopause podcast. Thanks for listening in today. I have an information-packed episode for you today. I had been hearing a lot in the menopause space and the women's health and midlife and longevity space recently, the importance of building muscle mass and maintaining bone density. And this is a big conversation that's happening right now. And many, many of us in the space are talking about it. But what I wanted to dig into was how you do it, what exactly is involved, and what it means to give yourself the nourishment needed to build these healthy tissues. We know that bone density loss happens at about a rate of 2 to 3% a year once a woman is in perimenopause until she reaches the postmenopause era, and then it can even continue beyond that. So we can lose significant amount of tissue over these years as our hormones are leaving the building, if you will. And so this is the importance of, because we know how metabolically active muscle is. And what I mean by that is it helps us balance our blood sugar, it helps us sleep, it helps us with movement and flexibility and a lot of other things. So this is not just about building muscle. And I'm not talking about bulking up. I'm talking about having good, healthy muscle mass on your body to keep you strong and flexible. But anyways, there will be other episodes coming shortly where I'll be talking more about what you do to build that muscle in terms of activities at the gym, or what you're doing to encourage those weight-bearing exercises, if you will. So that information is coming. But today, what we're talking about is getting the building blocks of protein in the diet so that your body is able to make the lean muscle mass and maintain bone density, among many, 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 many other things. So I'm talking about essential amino acids, and I'm talking about protein consumption in the diet. This is a big one because we as women, we struggle with getting enough protein in the diet. Number one, the recommended daily allowance is inadequate. It is not for optimal experience of the body. It is for minimal dosage, if you will. And so we need to just do much, much better than that. And so with that in mind, I've brought protein expert, co-founder and CEO of Keon onto the show to talk about protein consumption, how we optimize it, what protein is, what we need it for, how do we get it, how do we spread it out over the day, how it is that we can go about creating the nutritional or feeding the nutritional piece so that we can make the muscles and bones and other things that we need to know. So Angelo did not hold back. He shared with us his wealth of knowledge about the different protein sources. They're not all created equally. What are good sources of usable protein? How you consume protein if you eat meat or if you don't. Really useful information there. Something pretty cool he talked about called protein optimization. Listen in for that. That was huge for me. When I heard it, I was like, whoa, that's going to change the way I think about meals and snacking for sure. Protein is really, really important for women because we need it for recovery, we need it for muscle gain, we need it for energy. And there are options for us if we can't consume enough protein or don't, we lose the sense of the taste for it. So there are ways we can supplement the diet so that we're getting that maximal, optimized dose of protein and the healthy building blocks of protein called essential amino acids to make sure we're here, we're healthy, we're flexible for the extent of our lifetime. So to me, this is a really important conversation. It was a very eye-opening conversation for me. I learned a ton. Protein's not just about building muscle mass, but it's also important for mental state. It's also important for hydration and digestion and a lot of other things. So Angelo Keeley was born in Austin, Texas, and was raised in a family that were very health aware. His parents were in the supplement and health food business in the 70s. And he had a transformative experience when he was a young man that really allowed him to understand the importance of taking care of your body and what that means to actually take care of the body. He's been involved in nutrition, functional fitness, yoga, and meditation for over 20 years. He studied and lived in France and India. He speaks multiple languages, and he's the protein guru. So listen in for a great episode. Tons of information coming your way. You know I love the tactical stuff. So I promise you that when you are done listening to this episode, you will look at your food differently and you will consume protein with a much more mindfulness to it. So thanks for listening as always. And before we get into the episode, I'd like you to take a moment to hear from our sponsor. Okay, welcome to the Not Your Mother's Menopause podcast, everybody. I'm Dr. Fiona Lovely, and today I have the pleasure of introducing Angelo Keeley, protein expert. Angelo, welcome to the show.
Dr. Lovely, thanks for having me. I'm honored to be here.
It's a pleasure. I love this subject, and I know you have so much wisdom to share, but we're going to talk about protein. We're going to talk about it at length. But before we do, I want to know a little bit about you. How did you find yourself an expert in protein?
Well, you know, I think like many things in life, it started pretty young. I was raised in a family that was very interested in natural health. So my dad was actually in the supplement business. He imported botanical herbs in the 70s. And then they had a natural health food store, a natural health food restaurant. And they also made the decision, both my parents, to be vegetarian / pescatarian. At that time, they just said vegetarian, but we ate some fish sometimes. And in that context of them being pretty educated about nutrition, they knew that being very considerate about protein was important. So from a very young age, literally as young as I can remember, I remember us discussing at the dinner table, at lunch, at breakfast, why we were eating certain foods and why there was a certain amount of protein in those foods. And maybe if there were two different sources of protein that had different amino acid profiles, it's getting kind of nerdy, but like literally my parents would talk about this with me, you might want to combine them and then you could get a complete protein and it would make it easier for your body to use those proteins to be healthy and strong. Even more so, my mom, you know, from a very young age would give me amino acids. Sometimes she used them both to supplement her diet, but also specifically around like exercise performance. She was really into master swimming. And so I was exposed to these things like really young, which just kind of makes an imprint, right? Like when I think you're exposed to ideas and to values, they become something that's just important to you. And as I grew older, I naturally explored different things in life. You know, I maybe kind of fell away. I didn't fall away, but in adolescence, I explored a lot of other things. I wasn't just doing like what my parents, eating all these healthy things my parents told me to eat. But I also got into trouble and I got into drugs and got into social stuff and wound up getting really hurt through an experience. I actually ended up getting stabbed and nearly beaten to death. And the recovery from that experience required me to think a lot about my health. And that was to think about my physical health. Like my patella tendon was severed. So like, how am I going to learn how to like walk again and strengthen my leg and get to be, I loved running, like get to be a runner again and do the things that I cared about. But also like my nervous system was a wreck. And just like mentally and emotionally, I was pretty disturbed. And so in that context, I started to think about things like physical training, modalities like acupuncture and going to a chiropractor, things that I'd been exposed to as a kid with kind of hippie parents in Austin, Texas, but also like things like nutrition. And I really came back to my roots at that point. This is when I was 16 and a half. I'm like, wow, like protein nutrition is going to be really important for me in this recovery period because I have to rebuild all these tissues in my body. And protein is the base of the amino acids that form the neurotransmitters that create my emotional experience. And so I just got really serious about protein intake and about just my overall diet. You know, I think fast forward 15 years, because over those next period of years, or 15, 20 years, I did a lot of different things. I developed a career overseas. I lived in Europe for several years, in India. I moved back to the States, ran a behavioral healthcare company for a few years. And, you know, at some point, I really did just come back to those kind of protein, amino acid nutrition roots and formed a company in 2017 that was focused on that. I was focused on making really high quality supplements and foods, but really with this primary focus and these hero products that were based around protein and amino acid nutrition. And so in through this whole journey, from when I was a kid to when I was a teenager, to then really trying to start this company, I've always been interested in the research and trying to understand it more and know what it is. But I would say that definitely in trying to bring to market and formulate what would be the best products, I consulted with very smart people and spent a lot of time really just pouring through the research. And through that, I think I gained a unique understanding of what the science of protein and amino acid nutrition is, but also because I come from a perspective that's more about like bringing it to the people versus maybe being like just an academic researcher purely, I think I have a unique ability to synthesize it and help everyday people understand it and try to embrace it and improve their lives through it. So I'd say that's the story of my journey.
I'm grateful for you being the filter for the everyday people, because the science is awesome. But really, for those of us out here banging around, just trying to figure out, lots of people don't even really know what protein is or what it does in the body. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I think this is such a good place to start, rather than thinking like, let's almost just assume we know nothing.
Yeah.
So first of all, when we think about our diets, there, one way we can think about diet is we can think about macronutrients, and those are carbohydrates, fat, and protein. The primary role of carbohydrates and fat in our diet is primarily to be a fuel source. So if you think about your house, if you think about your body like a house, you need to keep lights on, you need to run the washing machine and the dishwasher, etc. You need to get energy from somewhere. Like fats and carbohydrates are two different sources of that. Maybe like one's more like natural gas and one's like electricity, like coming through the grid and the panel, etc. But both could be used within your house to like run your stove, for example. In our bodies, it's similar. You can eat carbohydrates or you can eat fat, and either one of them can be oxidized to literally be the energy that helps your heartbeat, your lungs function, to stand up and sit down and walk around and do all the things you need to do. Protein can be used for that, but it's not its primary role. The primary role of protein is more like a material to rebuild the house of your body. So if you think about your house again, anyone who's a homeowner, even if you're a renter, you surely experience that things don't last forever. The roof may wear out. You may need to replace an appliance. The carpet gets messed up and you have to fix it and repair it. And protein does a very similar role inside of our body. And that's because our bodies are actually made of proteins that only survive for a certain amount of time. And I'll explain that in a little more detail. So our physical bodies, you know, you've probably heard about half of it is water, and it depends whether you're male or female or how old you are, but let's say about half of it's water. The other half, over half of that part is made up of proteins. And that includes things like your vital organs, you know, heart, kidneys, liver, et cetera. But it also includes your hair, your skin, your nails. I think maybe more familiar to people, it includes your muscle, like all your lean muscle tissue. Maybe less familiar to people, it includes enzymes, hormones, and even neurotransmitters. The chemicals in your brain are the derivatives of protein, the metabolites. They are amino acids, or they come from those amino acids. That's like what runs the chemistry of your brain. Proteins make up all your vital organs, your lean muscle tissue, your skin, your hair, your nails, and even things like the enzymes in your body. Hormones, when we discussed all these different types of hormones that are the chemical messengers that make all these things happen in your body, and neurotransmitters. So neurotransmitters are the metabolites, the little pieces basically of proteins, of amino acids or what amino acids turn into. And throughout our body, these proteins or the metabolites of these proteins only have a certain half-life, we'll say. And what that means is that a protein functions for so long. And maybe it's the easiest thing would be to think about, you know, like tissue in a vital organ like your heart. There's proteins that make up that tissue. And after a certain amount of time, like the quality of the fibers of the muscle tissue itself in the heart is not, it's gotten old. And the body knows it wants to replace that protein with a newer protein so that the heart can maintain the quality of its function. So this little tiny microscopic protein breaks apart. And when it breaks apart into these 20 amino acids. Those are the little building blocks that make up the proteins. And this, but I'm giving the example of the heart, but this is for all the different proteins within your body. Mm-hmm. And when it breaks apart, some of the amino acids can get reused. Imagine they're like, you know, if you're remodeling your house, you might like take apart some walls and like the sheetrock is old. You're not going to reuse the sheetrock. You're going to throw it away. But maybe some of the studs, like the pieces of solid wood, you could reuse. So it's similar. There's some of the amino acids, they're not good anymore. And you literally just pee them out. They get converted to urea. And the other amino acids are still good. You want to keep them and you can actually reuse them to help rebuild proteins in your body. But what you just acknowledged right there is like, oh, I lost some pieces of the protein. I kept some. So now there's a deficit. And how do I replace or correct that deficit of amino acids to rebuild the proteins? That is why we eat protein. So when we eat protein, and this is in the form of plant proteins like beans and rice, even grains like rice and wheat and things like that have proteins in them, to things like animal products, eggs, milk, meats, cheeses, etc. When we eat these, our body digests it. It breaks apart the proteins into the little tiny amino acids. There's 20 of them. They go into our blood and then they become available throughout the whole body to help rebuild proteins. So if you don't eat enough protein every day, you will not give your body what it needs to help rebuild all of these parts of your body, again, from vital organs to muscle to hormones to enzymes, et cetera. So protein is it's truly essential, and you truly will die if you do not eat it. Whereas you could vary maybe the amount of carbohydrates and fat that you eat based off what kind of energy source you want to live off of. There's an essential component of certain, you know, fats for rebuilding cells, et cetera. But like proteins, like you can't go without proteins. Mm.
So you mentioned the different proteins. What is the thing we can eat in our diet that is proteinaceous?
Like what are the best proteins?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What is a protein?
What is a protein in diet?
Yes.
Yeah. So well, this is a great question. So protein, similar to us, like how I describe like, oh, over half of our solid mass is proteins. Mm-hmm. A similar thing is occurring in the rest of nature. Mm-hmm. So for example, if you eat a piece of meat, right? If you just think of like a cow, part of it is made up of lean muscle. Part of it has some organs. Like some people eat like, you know, the organs of different animals, like liver is like a, you know, specialty, mm-hmm. but then there's also like fat that surrounds it, et cetera. So in animals, maybe it's more clear. So it would be things like the muscle of an animal that was a piece of meat or steak, et cetera. Also, there's proteins that come from things like dairy. So in the milk itself, there are proteins in it, but there's also other stuff. There's sugars and there's fats, et cetera. And the same thing is true for plants. So in plants, part of the plant, part of the rice, part of the potato, part of the quinoa, buckwheat, soy, other legumes is a protein. And part of it is also a carbohydrate in many cases. And maybe there are fats as well in these plant sources. So most foods we eat have some amount of protein in them. The question is, when you're trying to then evaluate the quality of a protein is, out of the total mass that it includes, mm-hmm. how much of it is protein? Because the rest that's not protein is something else. It's carbohydrates or it's fat. And all of those have calories as well. So which one is like the most protein dense, like has the most amount of protein per total calories of the food? And then you would look at, okay, well, that thing that's really dense in protein, what's the quality of that protein? And the first question you'd ask when you say what's the quality of the protein is, for a human body, how digestible is it? If I eat that protein, whether it be beans and rice, or chicken, which one, when I digest it, is my body going to have an easier time of breaking apart those proteins and getting the raw amino acids from it? And then the next question is, and we can go back and we can evaluate all these food sources, would be, okay, now I know like it needs to be dense in protein, it needs to be digestible by a human body. And then the third question would be, how much, and this is a really important point to highlight, how much of that protein is essential amino acids? Because there's actually two different kinds of amino acids. I mean, there's more than this, I'm simplifying, but there's the essential ones and the non-essential. The essential amino acids are the ones that you have to get from food. If you get those essential amino acids from food, from your diet, you then can actually synthesize, your body can create the other amino acids from those essential ones. But it cannot, we don't have the capacity to actually synthesize those essential ones. That's why for us, they may not be essential for another creature in nature. For us, they are truly essential. Our body cannot make them. Furthermore, they are the active part of the protein, the active ingredient in the protein. So the non-essential amino acids can be good. They can be used in the body in different ways, but they're not as much used. You end up actually converting more of them into sugars or peeing them out. And the essential ones are the ones that actually stimulate new protein synthesis. They tell the body, like, let's make new proteins. Let's rejuvenate the body. Let's rejuvenate the skin. Let's rejuvenate the hair. Let's build new muscle, et cetera. And so you really want something, one, that's high in protein relative to the total mass, two, that's digestible, and three, that has a lot of the essential amino acids as a portion of that protein. So when you look, you know, in nature and you try to find these things, if you're on the more plant-based side, you would look for things like soy is relatively high, quinoa, buckwheat. Those are some of your better options. And it's totally possible to be plant-based. I will acknowledge that animal proteins are more digestible in terms of the amino acid availability, and they are higher in a proportion of essential amino acids. So as soon as you move to eggs, dairy products, and then actual meats, they are specifically for the purpose of being utilized by our body for protein synthesis, they are more efficient and effective. So you would need to eat more plant proteins to get, you know, a similar impact, just total more amount of the total plant proteins to get the same impact from a lesser amount of the animal proteins.
Which means then you're adding more calories to the diet. Not that we're so concerned about calories anymore, but you have to make sure there's an equation here. You have to make sure you're using those calories. Otherwise, you're going to find yourself without your pants fitting.
And I think that's the thing too. You know, I think it's interesting. The last few years it's come out, there's been very high performance athletes that have gone on plant-based diets and they've done it successfully. And I think that actually makes a lot of sense. If I'm a really hardcore endurance runner, and I run 50 miles a week or 100 miles a week, I am burning so many calories every day. It's not a big deal for me to consume 4,000 or 5,000 calories a day. I can burn that. I can burn that. And so I can consume that amount of calories. Whereas if you live a more normal life, I don't know, like I think most people, like they're excited if they can walk 10,000 steps a day. You know, like that's solid, you know, you're burning a lot less calories and just a more normal life. Even if you try to go to the gym and go on a walk and do things like that, I think, you know, considering how much total energy intake you're consuming has a bigger impact. And that's where, you might have to be that much more diligent if you choose a plant-based diet to like really be thinking about how you're choosing what you're getting, because it's not as flexible.
Okay. Well, let's talk about metrics around how much protein we need to consume every day, because there's certainly, especially in the menopause space, and this is a show about menopause for women in the menopause transition or perimenopause. And I've heard it said that we should be aiming for, I mean, there's a few different metrics out there, so I'd love to hear your thoughts, but 1 gram per kilogram, or 1 gram per kilogram of ideal body weight. I've also heard it said as 1 pound. So again, I'd like to hear your thoughts on that. I guess it just depends if those of us in metric system versus imperial. And I've also heard that it's difficult to get enough protein if we're fasting. It does, let's say something like an amino acid supplement. We don't want to do an exercise without protein in the system if we're fasting, but there's a lot of talk about that. I mean, I'm throwing a lot of stuff at you here, Angela, so I'd love to hear your thoughts. But
we can cover it all.
Okay, perfect. Well, let's start with like What is the metric here? And then also 30 grams per meal is what women want to sort of aim for. Now, it's going to be different for men, but this is an episode, this is a show for women, so let's talk about the female bits here. So what do
Yeah,
you think?
absolutely. So what I would say is I always aim to try to keep it simple for people and to
Please.
not make it feel really overcomplicated. What I'll acknowledge is there are a lot of different studies on this. And so people could potentially cherry pick from different studies to make their point about what they think is most important or most valuable. What I'm offering is really like a consolidation of all of the research and in some ways a simplification of it. So what I would say is that the recommended daily allowance is provided by, national health agencies. It says it should be basically 0.4 grams of protein per pound of body weight. So for the simple math, not assuming anyone weighs 100 pounds, some people may weigh, but let's just say it's 100, you weigh 100 pounds, that would be 40 grams of protein. So if you weighed 150 pounds, it'd be 60 grams of protein per day. That recommended daily allowance is truly is the bare minimum. If you consume less than that, you have, and that's across different ages, et cetera. And it's a very simplified thing to create like basic health standards of like not like people having significant malnutrition. That is the absolute bare minimum that you would need to not have problems like significant hair loss, organ issues, skin issues, like health, like true, like provoke significant health problems. So then the question becomes, well, okay, so that's like the bare minimum, so I don't get into like trouble, right? What's an ideal or an optimal amount of daily protein intake so that I can thrive? And when you say thrive, well, then questions become, how old am I? What's my daily activity levels? Are there differences if I'm male or female, et cetera? And so this is what I would say. I'm gonna give a few different points and then I'll summarize. Maybe I can just answer specifically for between the ages of, say, 45 and 55, and you're female. So we'll
Please,
give really
please.
direct at the end. Yeah. So the more active you are, the more protein you will want to eat because you will need more protein to service all the protein requirements of your body that are basically promoted through activity. Like when you exercise or do things, you're basically telling your body to rebuild proteins. You're creating stress on the body, stress on your muscles. Even if you go for a walk or a run or et cetera, you need more protein to service the needs totally of the body. So if you like to exercise a lot, think, okay, I want to be higher on the protein scale. And again, I'll get to specific numbers, but I'm just trying to give the big ideas. If you are in a situation where you are over the age of 30, and I would say, like, typically I'd say if you're an aging adult, right? But it's like we're all aging. Like once you're 18, you're an aging adult. You're an adult who's getting older,
Yes.
right? But like over the age of 30, what happens is your ability to digest proteins, to break them down, and it becomes diminished. And your sensitivity to the amino acids to actually stimulate mTOR and promote new growth to say, which makes sense. You think about people getting older, like the older you get, does your skin get more tight or does it get looser? Does it get more wrinkly or less wrinkly? Your hair, does it get richer and fuller or thinner? Your muscles, do they get like bigger and stronger or do you start to lose muscle mass? And that's because your body is simply not prioritizing the utilization of protein and amino acids to rebuild and repair and like remake all these proteins in your body. If you want to overcome that, you want to give yourself more protein and nutritional interventions of consuming more protein, and we can get into amino acids a little bit later, will help to overcome that. Depriving yourself of protein will provoke it more. And then I think the third really important thing to name is if you have a goal of, well, actually, there would be two more. One is just like if you have a goal of trying to build or maintain muscle, which is kind of related to that aging thing I just said. But like if you really want to build or maintain muscle, more protein. You need more protein. It's the only way that you can support the development of new muscle. You probably want to do some kind of resistance training and exercise, but you need more protein. And then the fourth thing I was going to say is if you want to lose fat but maintain your muscle mass, which I think most people do. I think people get into an idea of like, oh, I feel overweight or I want to lose 10 pounds. They're not thinking like, oh, I want to lose 10 pounds and like it'd be great if half of it was muscle and half of it was fat. It's like, no, I want to like keep the muscle on my arms. I want the fat to be less so like I have a bit more like definition and I feel better about how it looks or how I feel about myself, right? And what happens is when you try to lose weight, which I think people are ultimately trying to lose fat, a very common way of doing it, and you can do this through various diet interventions. They could be like a keto diet or a pure caloric restriction diet or excluding certain other types of food groups, et cetera. What ends up happening is you do restrict calories. You basically consume less energy in a given day than you need to be able to maintain your current body weight. But what happens is when you do that, when you truly technically, you know, starve, you not starve yourself in a negative way, but you deprive yourself of the calories you need to maintain the current body weight, your body does not just burn the fat. It starts to actually burn the muscle as well. And you can actually burn muscle faster than you burn fat. You can burn a pound of muscle with a 750 calorie deficit. You can burn a pound of fat with a 3,500 calorie deficit. And when you deprive yourself of calories, your body starts thinking when you eat protein, oh, like I said earlier, it doesn't think, oh, I should use this for its primary purpose of helping me build and maintain my muscle and rebuild the proteins in my body. No, it says, I'm hungry. I'm going to use this protein instead as energy. So it actually burns more of the protein and amino acids as a fuel source than it does to help rebuild tissue. So you have to dramatically increase the amount of protein that you eat. By actually even like, I mean, recent studies have shown 300% increase of protein intake, 300% increase of essential amino acid intake, which is the thing inside the protein you're really trying to get. And this is a perfect example of why amino acid supplements can be so useful in this kind of case, for just a 30% reduction in calories. So if I'm currently consuming 2,100 calories a day and I want to cut it by 700 because I want to lose, you know, a pound and a half a week or something, I need to increase my protein intake three times. I need to 3x my protein intake during that period to ensure I don't lose muscle mass or deprive myself of the protein it needs to maintain all my protein function. So these are all examples of why you'd want to consume more protein. So just having shared all that, I think all those things get blended in to say, for most people who are trying to thrive, you want to aim, and I'd say it's very relevant for this particular group of 45 to 55, a gram of protein per pound of body weight. And sometimes they'll say, oh, a gram of protein per pound of ideal body weight. And I would say, no, I would aim it towards a gram of protein per pound of body weight. Because even if you're trying to get, like, let's say you want to lose 10 pounds, like you actually want to be increasing the protein and reducing the carbohydrates and the fat instead. Like if you're going to try to cut out something from your diet, try cutting out the carbohydrates and the fat versus cutting out the protein. That's a good general rule. Sorry, I can share more, though, also specifically about I think, perimenopausal and menopausal women in general as well.
And I want to talk about this here for a second, because I find this really interesting. When I, just probably the last 18 months or so, I've been really focusing myself on making sure I'm getting the protein first before I'm eating the other things. And what I find is really fascinating is that when I consume the protein first, I have my cravings go away. Mm-hmm. And I want to eat way less. And I know this speaks to things like the protein prioritization that happens, which mm-hmm. is a fascinating concept. Now, Angelo, understand that my listeners and I both were raised in this era of this crazy diet industry where women consumed, you know, you said 750 calories a day, like ridiculous numbers. There's just no way we can sustain appropriate health with those kinds of numbers. But this was the 80s, the 70s. This is what we grew up on. We had diet suppressant drugs and all kinds of other crazy things. And so I think for a lot of us, we get really messed up about this information. And so I love the biochemistry lesson you've just given us, because if we needed it, we just got it.
What I hope was, I hope it's like helpful and empowering. The last thing I want to do is encourage anxiety around it or neuroses or something. It's like, my hope really is that it's like, it's empowering to understand. And I think you actually made a great point and very practical tip. There's something called the protein leverage hypothesis. That is, if we get our protein needs met first, we'll stop eating. And that's because that there's a primary function going on in our body where we know, part of our body knows how much protein we really want and we need, and we'll eat whatever is in front of us until we get that sufficient amount of protein. And once we get that, ooh, we'll stop eating.
Yes. I was like, hold on, you need to say that again.
Yeah.
So, oh, I'm repeating that. You will continue to eat until you get what your body needs.
And so if you prioritize eating the protein first, prioritize eating kind of, yeah, like make sure you get the protein in first whenever you're eating a meal. or meal planning or whatever you're trying to do, you'll notice like, oh, which is so interesting too. It's like flipped like in like eating out culture. Like they bring you all like the bread and butter first, or like chips and salsa or whatever it is. It's like, no, really, I should be like eating protein first. And if I can eat the protein first, whatever that is, I will be satiated. It will actually solve the hunger hormones of ghrelin. Like it will change those dynamics to where I don't literally feel as hungry, because that's what my body's trying to get from the food. It's trying to get this protein. And I wouldn't just say it's trying to get the protein. It's trying to get the essential amino acids in the protein. That's what it wants. And if it can get those, then the craving for more will start to become tamed.
Well, and let me ask about that then. So, I've noticed that women generally don't gravitate towards protein. We gravitate towards other things. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. We take comfort from food. And to be honest with you, a croissant is far more comforting than cheese or a steak. I don't know. I take lots of comfort from a steak. So I remember when I was doing my clinical neuroscience postdoctorate training years and years ago, and it was like these intense 3-day weekends. And my husband would always say to me, being the good husband that he is, he was like, "What do you want me to cook you to eat?" And I was like, "Meat. Like, I don't care about whatever else. I just need meat because my brain is like smoking by the time I get home." Right. So I guess I knew that early on, but as we get older, we tend to lose the appetite for protein. And so for women that struggle, let's say to eat a piece of chicken, an appropriate amount, let's say it's 30 grams in a meal, we can supplement to help with that protein consumption. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I didn't quite answer like how much should the dose be earlier for protein? I think 30 grams is a good amount. What I would say is just generally, not to like, again, to try to make it easier for people, is ideally you'd eat three wholesome meals per day of real food. And that real food would include things like, if you know, it could include like things like plant-based things like oatmeal, but like we don't add a tons of sugar or tons of other stuff into it. But it could include things like tofu, it could include things like meat, include things like eggs. I think one tip I'd actually offer people in this audience is Greek yogurt. If you're not on the Greek yogurt train yet, it's a little tiny thing. It's got 20 grams of protein in it. It packs a real punch and it's delicious. And it's not, yeah, it's like I can get it. Like you don't want to, maybe you just want to eat like a piece of chicken, right? So you're trying to figure out how to eat a few meals per day that are nutritious and that are rich not only in protein but also other micronutrients from vegetables and fruits and whole grains, et cetera. So then the question is, even if you do that, so let's just say you're trying to hit 150 grams of protein per day, right? And you got in 30 grams of protein in each one of these three meals, which is pretty solid, you're still only at 90 grams of protein, right? You still got 60 grams of protein to somehow hit the 150 gram protein thing per day that we're talking about trying to get to. So how can you get that? This is where I do think, as long as you're getting that solid base of like 90 to 100 grams of protein from real food, and this is for a 150 pound person. If you're a 100 pound person, it could be less, right? If you're a 150 pound person, like the way to get those other 60 grams, I think for people with busy lives, if we're talking about, menopausal women, you probably have, many of you have families, you have kids, you have a lot going on, you have career, you have all these things going on, and like trying to prepare one more protein rich meal, right, can be hard. Supplementation can make a lot of sense. And I think this is where typically people have found protein powders to be helpful. And it's also specifically where something like essential amino acid supplements can be really helpful. And so I can share a little bit more about that. So not only can these supplements help hit the requirement of the protein you're trying to get to, but they're actually, and this is why I said be really precise, they're actually more effective than whole food protein, specifically for protein synthesis, for the reason of like why we're trying to hit these higher daily protein requirements. They don't have as much, other like healthy fats in them, and they don't have all these other micronutrients in them. But if what you're really trying to hit is these higher daily protein requirements, they're much more effective. And I'll explain why that is and how.
Please.
So when you eat a whole food protein, your body has to digest it first. And so literally just the difference between 70 grams of steak And you could replace this instead with some type of plant protein, but the studies, I'm citing specific studies, so can't be misinterpreted. 70 grams of steak combined with broccoli and potatoes and other, and a whole mixed meal that you eat at once. When my body tries to digest that, it's mixing up the broccoli and the potatoes and these other things. And so the amino acids, how quickly that they are able to be digested and integrated into the blood, is much slower than if I were to just eat 30 grams of steak, less than half, but on its own. So that 30 grams of steak on its own creates a greater increase in protein synthesis than the 70 grams of steak when it's eaten as part of a meal.
Wow.
And that's because my body digests it more easily, mm-hmm. and the peak concentrations of the amino acids in my blood increase more rapidly, and they're more immediately available to my muscle and to my whole body. And so it promotes this muscle protein synthesis. So now get this. So I've gone from 30 grams of steak versus 70 grams of steak in a mixed meal has more impact. If I go all the way down to 11 grams of a whey protein powder, it provokes and stimulates more protein synthesis than either one of those. So literally 1/7 or like 15% the amount of protein powder, gram for gram. This is whey protein powder. It wouldn't be exactly the same if you're looking at a plant-based protein powder, et cetera. Then that steak is part of a meal. It's like, I mean, it's 6 to 7 times as powerful.
Wow.
So the protein powder actually packs this amazing punch. And that's because in something like a whey protein isolate, you've stripped out the lactose, the carbs, the fat. It's just this protein that's highly available. And when you digest it, it immediately goes into your system and is immediately available. It truly is more bioavailable. Now, get this. If you compare essential amino acids to that, essential amino acids are basically 3 times. I'm going to give the example for young adults, and then I'm going to give the example for a menopausal woman because this is even more stark and incredible for a menopausal woman. For a young adult, say 20, I think these are 20-year-olds, the essential amino acids provoke 3 times the amount of protein synthesis as the protein powder. So we're talking at a scale of like 20, 25 times more potent than a steak as part of a mixed meal. Now, the reason for that is the essential amino acids are 100% the active component of the protein. They don't include any of the non-essential amino acids. They don't even require digestion. They basically just go directly into your system, into your blood, and they immediately support protein synthesis. By the way, I'll just note things like Keon Aminos, and you can find them in other brands, but they are plant-based. So they're vegan, they're fermented from natural plant sources. So they're really palatable and acceptable to basically every diet that I can think of. They're way more effective than a whole food protein. Like, I mean, this incredible scale. So when you're trying to get in those last 60 grams of protein, right? You have the 3 meals of 90 grams. You actually could just probably include a couple servings of essential amino acids during the day. Or if you wanted to, a serving or two of essential amino acids, maybe a protein shake in the afternoon, like whatever I think you like better, you would be hitting the reasons for which you are even trying to hit those higher daily protein requirements. Because you're not really trying to hit it just because it's protein. The only reason you're trying to eat that much protein is because you're trying to promote new protein synthesis. You're trying to help overcome the anabolic resistance that comes with aging. And that also comes specifically for perimenopausal, menopausal women around the hormonal changes. And the stress of those hormonal changes creates a deprioritization of maintaining muscle mass and changes the metabolism overall. And so by choosing to supplement in these ways, you can do something that like even just eating more protein won't necessarily do. And now here's like one of the really stark things I was going to name. The older you get, and there are studies now kind of tracing this specifically with women, for 60-year-old women, so obviously this is post-menopause, mm-hmm. essential amino acids have been shown to be 6 times as effective as a whey protein powder.
We all need to be taking this. Oh my God.
Well, yeah, I mean, what I would say is like, it's not like every single person needs to be taking this is like, you know, it's like what you have to do. But if you're looking for ways to simplify your life and you're trying to commit yourself to hit the bases already with like a few nutritious meals throughout the day, but you maybe even doing that and even doing gym stuff or exercise or yoga or whatever you were doing before to try to stay in shape is not working as well because there's major, you've got aging impacts already, whether you're male or female, but then you have on top of that significant hormonal changes that are increasing your anabolic resistance and the deprioritization of protein synthesis.
Yeah.
It makes sense to like it's a very reasonable thing to consider, like, oh, this supplement makes a lot more sense for me now than maybe it did when I was like 20. It makes a lot of sense for specifically these, you know, your audience is what I would say.
Well, and this is a really interesting thing. What makes me chuckle is I think about, in 20 years of practice, every woman that's come to me and said, my biggest issue at midlife is weight gain. And, the answer to that is there's a lot of reasons for that. And we think it's so simple. It's just a calories in, calories out kind of thing. And the truth is, there's this huge biochemical, neurochemical thing that changes at perimenopause. And we're learning more and more about this all the time. This is Lisa Moscone's work in the brain for sure in research. It's fascinating, but we think it's the same way it's always been, which is, when we were 25, it was a matter of, okay, if you feel like you wanted to lose weight, you reduced calories, you increased output, and that would change things. But it's so different for us at midlife. And you've just sort of put a point on that by talking about the research. So
Yeah, I think you spoke
interesting.
to that so well.
Thank you. Thank you. One of the clips I've seen on your social media, what is your social media, by the way, so people can find out more about you?
It's just Kion, Kion.
Right. Okay. At Keon Instagram, right?
Yep.
Okay. Awesome. And Keon is the company you created that you talked about at
Yes,
the beginning of the show, right? Perfect.
exactly.
And this is where people can find the essential amino acids that we are talking about in a supplement form,
Yes.
which, by the way, I take them and I love them. What I find is so interesting, like right the first time I used the Keon aminos was I felt like there was, it's a strange thing to sort of describe, but I felt satiated, even though it was breaking my fast. Like I should have been like, voraciously hungry at that point. I felt hydrated and satisfied. It's such a strange thing to explain to somebody, like until they actually have that experience themselves. And I could sort of guess as to what's going on there. I mean, you've talked about a lot of these things, but I find it quite fascinating. So that's how I take my aminos, my Keon aminos in the morning. And I love it. I love it. It's like a nice way to wake up. Anyways, I could go on.
I'm like that too. It's the first thing I take in the morning. And I think, I mean, just to provide more information about the things that you said, one, it is satiating. So for the same reason that protein is satiating and that it addresses your body's desire, like we talked about, you'll stop eating once you've gotten enough of these essential amino acids. It's the same idea. You're basically giving yourself this body, your body, this core thing that's related to how it defines itself as being hungry or not. So when you give it the essential amino acids, it feels satiated. On top of that, it's kind of like an off-label marketing thing, you know, because not many brands market amino acids in this way, but amino acids are actually highly hydrating. So the way that a beverage becomes more hydrating than water is if you improve its tonicity, basically the degree to which it helps the liquid pass through the small intestines. And amino acids have been shown to be more effective than glucose and as effective as electrolytes in that way. It doesn't do other certain types of like this is getting nerdy, but like kind of transfer of electrons stuff
Getting.
with as salt. Yeah, sorry, but it literally is
I
hydrating. So
love it.
it's more hydrating than water. And then one other point I just wanted to address was you
Fascinating.
named, you know, say breaking your fast. You know,
Yeah.
I would argue it doesn't break a fast. And
Okay.
here's what I would say. Why is one fasting? I think one can fast. And because people can say, oh, well, if you're saying a pure water fast, or say if you say a pure dry fast, like absolutely nothing, well, then yeah, you consume something. If it's a water only fast, well, then yeah, you consume something. But if you're really talking about a food fast, it truly is not, it's not a food in that it doesn't stimulate your digestive system the way that consuming food does and require all of this energy. So you can continue to fast and not stimulate your digestive system in the way that something even like a protein powder would, and continue to give your digestive system that rest that you may be wanting to give it. On top of that, then I think another reason why people potentially fast is they're trying to constrict the amount of hours that they consume food for like dieting purposes, basically try to like constrict how many calories they consume in a day. And it doesn't impact that in a significant way, in the way that it induces diet. There's diet-induced thermogenesis, and it's not this like heavy, bulky food. And then I think one other really important thing is the degree to which someone says, "Oh, but I'm fasting for longevity, you know, for like mitochondrial biogenesis or autophagy, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Amino acids, essential amino acids specifically, in models very similar to the models that have been explored to say that fasting promotes mitochondrial biogenesis, promotes just as much, if not more, than fasting or caloric restriction. So specifically for people who are trying, and I mean, I can share it with you. I mean, honestly, yes. Those studies are rodent studies. They're not animal studies. All the David Sinclair work, like it's not, they're rodent studies. They're kind of, we have very similar studies, I can share them with you, that actually show giving essential amino acids to these animals promote just as much, if not more, mitochondrial biogenesis, which just means like rebuilding the mitochondria, rebuilding and building new energy power plants in your cells, the things that like help rebuild your cells. Anyway, it promotes just as much, and it helps you maintain your lean muscle. Because every time you fast, if you go more than a few hours without eating protein or amino acids, you go into net muscle loss. That is simply what happens. It's not dramatic. It's not like you need to freak out about it. I mean, like, you're fine to go to sleep at night, not eat for 12 hours. But if you do a 24-hour fast, for example, you're starting to eat away at your muscle tissue to supply the rest of your body with amino acids. And if you simply take essential aminos, then you prevent that. And you can maintain your lean muscle even while you still get the benefits of reducing the amount of calories you're taking in, giving your body a digestive break, and promoting mitochondrial biogenesis. So,
and it's autophagy we love on this podcast. We talk about autophagy quite often. So I love this. Like, so that's it. Brain health. That's ultimately what we're talking about. And, you know, first of all, I love science. I'm super nerdy. And I made the decision years and years ago when I started the show that I was going to talk about things in the way that I like to understand them. So please, by all means, get nerdy on us.
Okay.
It's all good.
I always want to remain like helpful and accessible, as relatable as possible. And there's a balance between like how in detail you go on something.
Well, it's true. But as long as you keep it usable, that's ultimately how I like to do the show. And I've heard from my listeners over the years that they get a lot out of that, as long as it's usable information. And I think we have shared so much. I'm quite fascinated to hear what you said about that hydrating thing, because I said to my husband, I said, it doesn't really make sense. I can't, like, I don't know the science. I didn't know the science behind it. Now you're saying that essential amino acids in a supplement form, like the chione aminos, can actually be a hydrating feeling.
It hydrates better than water.
Okay.
If you take a scoop of chione aminos and you put it into 12 to 16 ounces of water, it makes the water, it improves the hydration of the water, similar to like hydration specific beverages.
I love when science proves something I feel, because when I have it, I'm like, why does it feel wetter than just water? I don't understand. Someone make sense of this. It's so good though. I love that. I'm glad I actually said that to you, because I thought, this can't be, I've just got to be perceiving something else. I wasn't even going to bring that up with you, but I was really curious about why that happens. So it's quite fascinating. But ultimately what you're saying is that not all protein is the same. And we, over time, our needs for protein change. And as we lose the ability to maybe take in as much protein as we want to or used to, we can supplement and get as good an outcome or as good a supplement into the body as taking in a protein, or even better. You're saying even better.
I would say better. I would say, better.
Okay.
And I'll just give you an example of better.
Please.
And again, I don't say better for the sake of saying that, again, that like anyone needs to do this. I so strongly endorse eating whole foods, good quality whole foods and meals that you love and, you know, and doing that. But for the case of supplementing, there are studies with older women specifically showing when they added basically a serving and a half, something like chione aminos twice a day in between meals, they reduced body fat percentage and increased lean muscle several pounds in just as short as 3 months.
Like, who doesn't want that?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like, that is not what eating, if you just added a piece of chicken, you know, as a morning snack and a piece of chicken as your afternoon snack, that is not what would happen.
Yes.
So it's fundamentally different, because it really has these unique stimulating benefits for promoting protein synthesis. Another great example is a NASA study. There are a series of them, but kind of the headline one from around, I think it's 2005, was NASA was trying to figure out how to help astronauts maintain their muscle mass when in space. Because as you can imagine, it's almost like being bedridden. You don't have to have strength, right, to push away things, to hold your body up against gravity so they'd lose muscle mass. And so, you know, they look into exercise methodologies and hormone replacement therapy, et cetera. But another thing they looked into was nutrition. So they paid for a study that turned out to be extremely successful, which was they had a group of participants at complete bed rest for 28 days. So these people are in a room, not getting up, using the bathroom in their bed, no physical activity, served three meals during the day. But on top of that, they're given the equivalent of like three servings of Kion Aminos six times during the day. So that's quite a bit. Like I was saying, you know, maybe take it twice a day. They're taking it six times a day. So that's like first thing in the morning, a couple hours later, you have breakfast, you take it again. But it's also a very distinct situation. Imagine if you're bedridden and you're really trying to maintain your muscle mass, right? Or you're in space in this case, right? And what they saw after 28 days was no net muscle loss.
Wow. In the absence of gravity.
Not in the absence of gravity. Well, not in the absence of gravity. This wasn't people in space. I mean, they have since used it as a nutritional application for astronauts. But I'm saying people at complete bed rest. Anyone that you know that's had surgery and had to be bedridden for 28 days, I mean, they all lost muscle. I mean, I've had the experience. I mean, I just discussed earlier my kind of traumatic experience when when I was 16. Like, I lost tons of muscle mass. And I was a young, fit adult. Mm-hmm. I wasn't like, you know, I was an adolescent. I wasn't a 50-year-old man, right? Yeah. And I lost tons of muscle mass within a week. This is 28 days, no loss of muscle mass. That's how significant the stimulation of the protein synthesis that taking something like essential amino acids can give. So it's something of the same. It's not the same degree as like lifting weights or doing yoga or Pilates or something like that. But it's of the same order. It promotes the same kind of thing. And if you do it consistently, if you take it every day, if you find these little holes in your day where maybe before you were having not really a very good snack, or you weren't eating anything, but you were feeling tired and wanting a coffee, or you add it to first thing in the morning or right before you go to bed, you are specifically creating this new, it's almost like a little mini workout, you know, that promotes this protein synthesis. That's not, you can't just eat chicken.
Right.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But that's also to say, I'm also saying keep eating food.
Of course. We are talking about supplementation here. And ultimately you do that when you cannot consume any further than what you've already done. Like you've done the whole foods, you've done two or three meals a day, whatever you're doing. Mm-hmm. Like I said, we talk intermittent fasting on this podcast quite a bit for brain health, but never over 20 hours, never. Most women I recommend sort of 16 to 18 for the autophagy and the mitochondrial piece. Like I said, brain health is a big deal on this show. Okay, let's sidestep protein just a little bit. And let me ask you this question. Why is muscle so important?
Oh, that's such a good question. So the first reason that muscle is so important is that, and this is in our entire lifetime, it's the reservoir, and I've hinted at this before, it's the reservoir of amino acids for the rest of our body. Mm-hmm. If you put money into a savings account or into a retirement account to take care of you when you're older, you should think about muscle as the same thing for your body. Because when you don't consume enough protein or you undergo some type of stress, and that stress could be hormonal based, it could be an injury, an illness, other types of life stresses, your body will deprioritize protein synthesis and building new proteins, and you will dramatically lose that. You will basically not be able to get what you need from your diet. And what happens is your body will start to break down your muscle mass. And that's why as we get older, we lose and lose and lose muscle mass if we don't deliberately try to protect it. So maintaining muscle mass as we age is super important, because otherwise we're going to lose it. Well, why do we care? Like, okay, I get that, but like, why do we care about keeping it? Well, it's what keeps us active. It allows us to continue to go on even just walks, right? But to go on hikes, maybe with a family, to pick up grandchildren, to perform basic functions, to be able to live unassisted as long as you can, to be able to maintain an active life. And when you are able to do that, you are able to then have all these other more positive health outcomes. You're able to spend more time outside. You're able to live longer. And so maintaining muscle mass is basically the most highly correlated thing to longevity in terms of health span, living a good, long, healthy life. And that's because it keeps you active. Also, if you're much less likely to get injured, to fall, to break your hip. You think about older people that, you know, you break your hip and it's kind of the beginning of a downward slide. And if you don't fall because you have good muscle mass and likely improved balance from that muscle, it's less likely to happen. But if you do fall, you're able to have muscle that helps you recover from it. They've seen it, like people that that end up getting diagnosed with cancer, the higher the muscle mass you have before you're diagnosed dramatically improves your final outcome.
Ooh, that's so important.
Yeah, dramatically improves the final outcome. So, and it's over and over again for all these different illnesses that potentially arise.
Cancer's one in two of us, right? One in two of us will experience cancer in our lifetimes. So that's critical. That by itself is reason enough.
Yeah.
Please go on.
And I was going to say, and then even outside of, you know, say these kind of more dire situations, which I think something we should think about, it will ultimately in our life will likely one of these things will happen to us is muscle is one of the primary things that helps regulate our blood sugar. When you have muscle, the more muscle you have, when you consume any type of carbohydrates, the glucose, your muscles would absorbs the glucose and ends up regulating the amount of insulin. So the more muscle you have, overall, the better blood sugar regulation that you're going to have. I mean, it's not exactly that clear, but I mean, it's exactly like that direct of a line, but it's pretty darn direct that it's like muscle is the thing that's one of the primary things that's helping regulate your blood sugar. So that's going to impact your metabolism. It's going to super impact your mental state. It's going to have all these different impacts. So I think if you just think about, man, I want to stay active and feel good in my body as long as I can. I want to have good blood sugar regulation and I want to live a long time. And I want to have the best possible outcomes if and when I am ever diagnosed with some type of serious disease or have a serious injury. Muscle is the bank account for your body that is worth investing in. And that literally you can like measure and see if you're building it or not, you know, and you're maintaining it. And again, this is not like trying to be some big, you know, I don't know, like no offense to CrossFitters, like a CrossFitter or some like super strong gym person. It's about maintaining the right amount of muscle for your body and for your own health.
Well, and we're hearing so much in the menopause space right now how important it is for women at midlife to have muscle for all the reasons you mentioned, but for flexibility and to stay active. And I love that you said picking up the grandkids, because that's a big deal for women in their menopause years, is being able to go up and down the stairs, being able to pick up the laundry, like keeping all those things. But also, as you've mentioned, the statistic says that after we've fractured a hip, we're like at double the risk of something like 50% of women who fracture a hip will die in the year after they fractured their hip. So it's dire, right? We really need to be paying attention to this. And you've given us just a beautiful check sheet, if you will, of the chemistry, the biochemistry, and this is how you take it. And this is how you do it. And if you can't get it in your diet, in your whole foods, whether it's vegetable source or animal source, then here's how you supplement from the best, most high quality supplement. Really, really important to do that. So I just thank you for this time. It's like been a textbook on protein. And I just wish I'd had this information when I was 13, still thinking that a bowl of undressed salad greens, not even nice salad greens either. It was a shitty iceberg lettuce and get this, a chicken breast, this is so gross, wrapped in plastic wrap, cooked in the microwave. That's what the diet industry taught me when I was a kid. Yeah. Anyways, that's beside the point. Obviously, we do not cook food like that. We do not eat food like that. If you are hearing me and taking that as diet advice, you missed the whole point. Please don't. But thank you for this, because again, we're just, my generation of women, we're just part of that really sort of mixed up. We didn't get really great information, and you have just corrected all of that. And I'm just so grateful. Thank you, Angelo.
Well, thanks, Dr. Lovely. It's been a pleasure just getting to have this conversation. And I hope again, I struck the right balance of going into detail to make sure I could try to be as nuanced as I could be, but also make it accessible.
I'm
and
sure, I feel
practical.
like you did. I absolutely feel like you did. So where can people find out? Certainly, where can they find out more about you and Keon, and what do you want people to know about how to find you?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can find out about me and the company on social media, on Instagram. The handle's at Kion, Kion. And then really our website has a lot of different information. It's getkion, getkion.com. A lot of different information about various health topics, about amino acids and protein, but other things as well. And I think that's where everything is. And I think we have also a special offer for your audience. So maybe
Yes, you
there's a unique
do.
URL. Yeah.
Yes, thank you very much for that. It's getkeon.com/lovely. So it is 20% off. Thank you so much for that. I appreciate that very much. And I've heard from a good source that your creatine is world class. We didn't even talk about that one
It's
today,
true.
did
It's
we?
true. It's like, I don't know. I decided, like, I'll take
How
the
do you answer?
compliment. Yeah. I'll
Yeah.
take the compliment. It really is. It's the best. It's the best on the market. Yeah.
Well,
Yeah. And
perhaps you need
creatine
to.
is another really interesting ingredient, I think, specifically for menopausal women as well.
This is what I've heard. I've
Uniquely
heard that.
beneficial. Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I've
Lots
heard
of
that
times it gets
recently.
grouped to, like, think about like guys at the gym,
Yep.
but it's extremely useful for menopausal women.
And I think there's some pretty good research on that too, is what I've heard.
Oh yeah, it is. It's a
Yeah.
highly researched subject.
Would you come back on the podcast and talk to us about that?
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
Oh, I'd love that. Okay, I've got a final question I ask all of my guests, and
Okay.
now you're in the hot seat. It
All
goes
right,
like
I'm ready.
this. Does not need to be related to whatever we talked about today. Literally, the field is open. Knowing what you know now, what would you tell your younger self?
Be patient.
I love that.
Yeah, I think I'm definitely very high energy person, and in life I wanted so much so fast, and yeah, I think as I've gotten older, I've just learned to like slow down and to be patient and to listen more, and through that, so much more has come to me than me trying to overreact and over control and engineer and do and make happen.
I love that. That's great advice. Thank you.
You're welcome.
The information and other content provided in this show, or in any linked materials, is not intended and should not be construed as medical advice, nor is the information a substitute for professional medical expertise or treatment. We are doctors, but we aren't your doctor. Seek your doctor's opinion. If you or any other person has a medical concern, you should consult with your healthcare provider or seek other professional medical treatment. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something that you have heard in this podcast or in any linked materials. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or emergency services immediately. The opinions and views expressed on this page and in this show have no relation to those of any academic, hospital, health practice, or other institution. Thank you.